Soy goals. United States is for Fig Newton. It was named after Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh.
I haven't had a Fig Newton in a really long time.
It's because they're bad cookies.
Man, you're really downing on a lot of things that I like this morning. Jeez, don't yuck my yum.
Don't what?
Don't yuck my yum.
Got it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, here with Jane Madnair. And diving right into our first guest for this hour, it's almost a year. Which is wild to think about.
It is.
It's been almost a year since on June 24th, 2022, the Supreme Court came down with their Dobbs v. Jackson decision, altering the reality for women in Wisconsin, people across the country. And it's been a wild year since of lawsuits and unbelievably tragic stories that we've heard of as far as people with wanted pregnancies and realities they've had to face, unwanted pregnancies and realities they've had to face. And so we thought we would talk to Jenny Higgins, who is has both a PhD and an MPH, and she is the director of UW's Collaborative for Reproductive Equity, also known as CORE. She's a professor of obstetrics. Thank you. And gynecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here. I appreciate your attention to this issue.
Yeah. And it's, you know, throughout the year, we've certainly, because this show started early July, so it was right on the heels of the decision. And so we've talked about it a fair amount, but it's wild to think that it's been a year. And in Wisconsin, despite, you know, I guess we've elected Justice-elect Janet Protasiewicz, which is maybe a light at the end of the tunnel as far as legally what is in Wisconsin, but functionally, pragmatically, what is in place today is still a complete ban. And, you know, I would say this as a personal anecdote. It's like, I'm currently 24 weeks pregnant. And like, that has been top of mind, right? Like, that was top of mind last year before it was like knowing that I wanted to get pregnant, of like what the reality is now living in this state. And so I'm so excited to talk to you. But let's just start at the very beginning as far as like, what is CORE? What is the work that you all do?
Sure. CORE is a research initiative. So our primary lane is evidence and collecting information and data and collating things on behalf of the state of Wisconsin on abortion, contraception, other aspects of reproductive autonomy. We're housed in the medical school, the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, in the Department of OBGYN. That helps you get around the pronunciation woes if you just say OBGYN.
I usually can pronounce it. It's just, you know, sometimes words are hard.
Yeah, well, you've been seeing, I imagine, some obstetricians in the last few months here, but we're interdisciplinary. So we have social scientists and clinicians and communications experts and community engagement professionals all part of our team, and we love the work we get to do at this moment in particular. When we started, abortion was still legal in Wisconsin, albeit very restricted. Mm-hmm. And then the Dobbs decision really put our work into a whole different kind of gear.
And so what has, I guess in two different buckets, as CORE, what has the last year been like? But I guess that's in like linked to what it's been like for women in general over the last year living in Wisconsin.
Right. I mean, what we're facing is nothing compared to the obstacles that people who are seeking abortions are facing, yeah. Right? In terms of how our work has changed, in many ways, our true north has remained the same, right? We're generating evidence to try to create better programs and policies. So we, in terms of how our day-to-day life changed, we went into a higher gear with trying to collect information on what's happening to people as a result of the Dobbs decision, and then the consequences to Wisconsinites and their families as a result of this decision. We can, in the short term, say certain things, but as you know, research is also a long game. Mm-hmm. Some of the impacts of this, and in fact, some of the research we've done at CORE is decades old, right? Like where we can look, we've been able to track for decades in one case, what's happened to people who weren't able to access abortion care. So while we're in this for the short term, we're also in this for the long run too, to document those consequences.
And so is part of the work collecting numbers? And I don't even know how you start to collect those, as far as like people who are leaving the state when there's an unwanted pregnancy, people who have had a wanted pregnancy, but something has gone wrong. Cause that's obviously a conversation I had with my gynecologist, as far as like what happens if that 20-week scan does not go to plan. And you know, I think so many, anecdotally, we hear those stories, at least I hear those stories pop up in headlines and testifying in front of Congress with the woman who testified, I think she was from Texas, and just the horrific situation she went through. And so are we starting to be able to collect numbers of like how many people have been affected in Wisconsin over the last year?
We certainly have collected numbers on just the sheer number of abortions that are taking place or not taking place in Wisconsin and other states. So let me take kind of the larger numbers first, and then I can take some of those really powerful individual stories next, because they matter a lot as well. So at the larger level, we know that in the months leading up to the Dobbs decision, about 600 abortions were taking place in Wisconsin every month. Now, I'll pause with a really important caveat. That number doesn't represent all of the people in Wisconsin who desire abortion care. It represents the actual number of abortions, right? Because we know some people aren't able to get over the cost and other obstacles.
Well, and also because even before the Dobbs decision, basically it was Sheboygan, Milwaukee, Madison.
Right.
We're the only places.
And Sheboygan was medication, abortion only care. And we had documented prior to Dobbs that when clinics in Appleton and Green Bay closed and people had to travel farther to care for certain parts of our state, the birth rates in those counties went up. Meaning when you increase the distance, even just by a 100 or 200 or 300 miles, some people can't overcome that distance barrier to get care. So we already know prior to Dobbs that at least some people in Wisconsin who would have wanted to get abortion care could not, and we're being forced to carry pregnancies to term, and we expect those numbers to go up. But just in terms of the sheer number of abortions that took place in the formal healthcare system prior to Dobbs, it was about 600 a month leading up to Dobbs. And then we know that that number has gone to virtually zero. So we do, of course, have this exception in our state to save the life of the pregnant person. And there have been certainly a handful of cases along those lines. But if we think about sort of a larger epidemiologic trend, it's less, you know, it's essentially zero each month abortions that have been happening in Wisconsin. That equates to, in the course of a year, about 7,000 abortions that haven't taken place in Wisconsin that would have taken place if the Dobbs decision had not gone into effect. So about 590 people a month. And that's, think about each one of those people, right? Each one of those numbers within 7,000 is a person who had to either leave the state, self-manage an abortion, or carry a pregnancy to term. Now, we also know what's happened to numbers in our neighboring states. Mm-hmm. We live by two haven states, Minnesota and Illinois. So in some ways, we're in a better situation than people in some states that are also bordered by other restrictive states. But we also know that the numbers in Minnesota and Illinois, the increases those states have seen, can't make up for the decreases in restrictive states like Wisconsin. Meaning, while we have seen increases, we know there are still people who are not getting the abortions that they would have gotten otherwise. Does that make sense?
Totally. We're talking to Jenny Higgins, who's the director of UW. Oh, sorry, I'm just going to introduce you. We're talking to Jenny Higgins, who's the director of UW's Collaborative for Reproductive Equity, about what the last year has looked like since the Dobbs decision came down from the Supreme Court on June 24th of last year. So I'll let you keep going talking, Jenny.
No, thank you. Forgive me for interrupting. So essentially, while we know that some Wisconsinites are leaving the state to get care, we know that others have been unable to do so. And one other data point I'll share in terms of sort of broader numbers, there's a service called Aid Access, which is an online service for medication abortion. So someone can obtain the same pills that are used in Planned Parenthoods and abortion clinics and other abortion healthcare centers. They can order those by mail, get guidance, and take those. Aid Access orders in Wisconsin went up threefold in the months following Dobbs. So not surprisingly, people were seeking medication abortion services in a self-managed way at higher rates than they had done prior to Dobbs. So we know that some people are at least ordering those pills. We don't have data yet on how many of them have successfully taken them and managed their abortions at home.
And we only have about 2 minutes before we have to go to break, but then wanted to definitely keep you through the break to talk about some of the other, what research has documented about impacts on abortion restrictions, besides the obvious of like, I have not been able to access something that I wouldn't need for my healthcare. But as far as, is it mostly still anecdotal as far as the unwanted pregnancies of people? I mean, the wanted pregnancies that there becomes, has a complication that this is also affected?
Yeah, those stories are so important and so powerful, and we've heard such stories in Wisconsin. A colleague of ours in California has collected stories from across the country, including Wisconsin, along these lines. And my colleague Abby Cutler in the Department of OBGYN is starting a project to more specifically delineate those stories. So those are so powerful, and there's so much confusion among providers in some cases about what to do.
Absolutely. All right. Well, our guest, Jenny Higgins, will still be here on the other side of the break. If you have any questions, feel free to text those in 844-967-2789. And we'll be right back after the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Oh, blaming on yourself. Sunshine. Ain't nobody's fault. But you're not that boogie. All of my long. You're not that boogie. Ain't nobody. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry with Jane Madner, and we are talking to Jenny Higgins, who is the director of UW's Collaborative for Reproductive Equity, on kind of looking back at the last year since Dobbs came down and Roe was overturned. And, you know, we talked in the previous segment kind of just the numbers that we can deduce from what was happening pre-Dobbs in Wisconsin, what has happened as far as going to haven states like Minnesota or Illinois. But what research has CORE done on not the numbers, but like the actual impact as far as behavior, as far as how this affects families, how this affects partners? Because that's some of the research you guys do as well, right?
Right. It's some of the research that we're actively in the field collecting data on, but we are also drawing from research that we and many of our colleagues in the national sphere have done in recent decades. So I'll just highlight a few to the individual pregnant person, right? And I'm loath to talk about this around a pregnant person because I don't want to draw alarm. But we know that maternal mortality rates increase when abortion restrictions or bans go into place, right? Not because people are performing unsafe abortions, but because carrying a pregnancy to term is about 18 times riskier than having a first trimester abortion, right? So even though giving birth can be extremely safe, and I'm sure you're in good hands.
Sure, I'm fine.
But when we look at a population level, carrying pregnancies and giving birth is just inherently riskier, right?
Yeah.
So we do anticipate that maternal mortality rates will go up. We've seen evidence of that. And we know that that's concentrated among women of color who already bear the tremendous burden of maternal mortality, especially in our state, right? It's egregious inequity. So maternal mortality is one. There's also indication that both physical health and mental health problems can come about when someone is denied desired abortion care. And, you know, everything from migraines, chronic headaches, hypertension, right, just due to the sort of increased strain and stress on one's life from having a child they weren't planning on having, to longer term mental health outcomes that we've shown to persist even into like middle age and beyond, right? So that when women have children they weren't planning on having, they often internalize the stress of that versus externalizing it onto the child, if that makes sense, right? Yeah. They adapt, they love these kids, they make it work, but there's an internalized cost. And then, of course, we know that abortion restrictions are associated with reduced educational and economic outcomes, right? If you're having a child you weren't planning on having, your ability to go to school, your ability to hold full-time employment, both go down, right? Yeah. So that's another impact that we both have seen in the past and we're expecting to see more. And we'll see widening inequities with the people in our state who already face the largest socioeconomic hurdles, right?
Not good. Jane, not good.
It's just... It's so disturbing and so upsetting on so many different levels, Jenny. And I just remain outraged and disappointed by the fact that our lawmakers did not, they knew this was going to come down. They'd been shooting for this. They've been aiming for this. They've been hoping for this. And they made no specific exceptions for how to care for women who have a wanted pregnancy that encounters issues that needs to be dealt with. The whole thing of how close to death do we have to let her get before we can help her? Yeah. And I think that is unconscionable.
Right. And the law itself is very confusing and hard for clinicians to interpret, particularly because a condition isn't always immediately and clearly life-threatening, right? It could become life-threatening if certain things happen. So we've seen that we've heard accounts in some of our research studies of patients who are having miscarriages and go to an emergency department for help. And the staff can be worried, if I treat you, am I breaking the law? Like there's confusion around miscarriage management as well. So it's this law affects all of us, but it's a particularly grim reality for people who are having wanted pregnancies and needing care.
Well, and it's also a grim reality to add to what you said as far as maternal mortality is the numbers of potential OBGYNs who are not going to come to Wisconsin or stay in Wisconsin after they graduate because they don't want to practice and risk getting arrested.
Yeah, it's a great point. And we have research even prior to Dobbs, we did a large survey of physicians at UW School of Medicine, and 2/3 said they were worried that restrictive abortion policies would have physicians potentially leave the state, or they would limit their ability to recruit and retain top physicians. So we're worried about not only folks leaving, but the inability to retain great med students and doctors to have their careers here, to do the work that they want to do for patients.
Absolutely. Well, we only have a couple minutes left, but what is some of the, I guess I'll ask this instead, what is some of the upcoming research that you guys are even going to be focused on?
Yeah, we're really excited about the work we're doing in the field right now with a couple different populations, including using some ads on social media to recruit people who might be considering pregnancy. It's from a research perspective, it's a little bit like finding a needle in the haystack. Like, how do you find the people who might need abortion but who aren't calling a clinic because it's not, you know, available here, or who aren't calling a healthcare facility? So we're going to be trying that. We also will continue to really focus on the ways in which communities of color and low income communities are facing these and adapting these to these challenges. But mostly we just want to, I'll say that, like, even with a reconstituted Wisconsin Supreme Court, We're trying to emphasize the evidence showing all of the harm of the pre-Dobbs restrictions in Wisconsin on people. So that's maybe where I'll stop.
Where we'll end for today. Well, we'll definitely have you back. Jenny Higgins is the director of UW Collaborative for Reproductive Equity. This was so interesting. Thank you for your work and thank you for spending time with us today.
Really appreciate it. And good luck with the continued pregnancy. You're going to be great.
I think so. We hope so. We're doing our best. All right. Thank you so much for your time. All right. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back after the bottom of the hour news. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Well, welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And I think it stopped raining?
No, it's still raining. I can see it. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
We really need it very, very badly.
I know. It's more fun when it's sunny out.
And it feels kind of like October.
Yeah, and it's just cold. Like how much of a drop there was over the weekend that we went from 83 on Saturday to 50s on Sunday.
I
was so bundled up for the beer run.
I bet.
I had a hat. I had gloves. I had two, like, multiple layers on. It looked like it was November, not June. But did you hear this? So in lighter news, did you hear the Hollywood Foreign Press Association sold the Golden Globes?
It popped up on my feed and I was busy doing other things, so I didn't look closely at that. They did what?
So the Golden Globes finds new home as the Hollywood Foreign Press Association shuts down. Yeah.
The organization as
I don't know
whole.
How this isn't bigger news. This I feel like this was tucked away in my different newsletters, like my aggregate roundups of what's going on in the world. And in two different newsletters, this was in there, but it was like one line, like of like other things you need to know. But I feel like this is kind of a big deal. So Dick Clark Productions, alongside asset management company Elridge, has acquired all the assets, rights, and properties of the Golden Globes from the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. And the financial details of the transaction were not disclosed, but the deal will result in the end of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association and its membership.
Wow.
And so the next Golden Globes Awards will take place on January 7th, 2024. But there you go. So it feels like
that seems to cause some ripples.
Well, because they've been, you know, it's been, even when they had their Golden Globes this last year, there was the fact that it was the first time that they kind of came back since all the controversy. Obviously, they had canceled it, or there had been all, like every award show with COVID and stuff like that. But it had been all of this controversy around, you know, who was a member and racial stuff. And apparently they just didn't bounce back. So the California nonprofit announced Monday that it and asset management company Elridge acquired all the assets. But so Dick Clark Productions, it runs Billboard Music Awards and Dick Clark's New Year's Eve Rockin' Eve.
Yep.
And so now it will plan and host and produce the annual Golden Globes Awards show. And I don't see, so the dissolvement of the Hollywood Foreign Press and the transition of the Golden Globes to Dick Clark Production comes on the heels of several controversies surrounding the journalist organization. And I don't know, maybe it was just because so many people stopped their membership.
Well, so who is going to decide who wins?
I have no idea.
Is it just up to the people who are on the board of Dick Clark Enterprises? I mean, because this, the the Golden Globes were awarded to people selected by the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Yeah. And so, and like when you think about the Oscars, it's the Academy. Like
right.
You're in the Academy and
you can vote. Yes.
And so I don't know, but that I saw that and I was like, how is this not bigger? Maybe it's just like from my Hollywood days and still having, you know, an eye on things that are going on in entertainment, but feeling like, how is this like such a small story? I feel like that is one of the top five award shows every year. And so to have an entire membership organization dissolve and to sell that off feels like there is more to that story than what was covered.
Well, I guess today of all days, maybe it was easier to push down considering that a former president is in Florida being indicted on, what, 37?
Do we have any updates on that?
Have you seen anything come through? The only thing that I've seen is that there was a bomb threat.
Okay.
That everybody had to clear out of the courthouse in Miami, and I believe they are back.
Okay. But nothing too crazy
so far. Nothing's
come through as far as ridiculous amounts of violence or...
Not that I have seen. I will continue to look. The other thing that hit this morning... more good economic news, people. Inflation dropping even more than expected, down to 4% on the year.
I was wondering how that was going to turn out.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
That is good. For the average consumer, that means the price increases that we've all faced from gasoline, eggs, and groceries, clothing, and more are heading back in line to normal. In fact, inflation has now dropped 11 months in a row to the lowest point in 2 years.
So that brings up, and now we're kind of going to wing it a little bit, but I feel like the economy is better than we feel like it is. You know what I mean?
Yes.
When it feels like, all right, so it seems like, and maybe we need to have my brother back on the show to kind of talk about what's happening and what isn't happening, but when we talk about, and this is not just to like be like, Biden's doing such an incredible job or whatever, but it's like to think about numbers, think about job creation, think about unemployment numbers, inflation is coming down, the market has not crashed.
Yep.
And yet I feel like if you asked people about the economy, the general ethos is it's in the crapper. And I like, where is the cognitive dissonance there for us? And is it what responsibility lays at the feet of media who's talking about things because you got to fill time and we just got to talk about it every day. But it feels like so often when I'm reading the news and reading the headlines, there's this, we're on the edge feeling all the time. Like we're on the edge of a recession. We're on the edge of things are still bad. Inflation is still bad. And yet all of the core leading indicators and the numbers it feels like we rely on, and I'm not an economist,
right,
to tell us what's going on are not that bad.
It has to be, again, it's just personal experience. I think what people are experiencing when they go to the grocery stores, some things are still markedly more expensive. Although, as we talked about, I think it was just last week, the price of eggs, which went insane.
Yep.
They're now down to like $1.50.
Yeah.
Much closer to normal.
Totally, yeah.
And we're not hearing reports of that. When you heard all the egg prices are skyrocketing, the sky is falling, Chicken Little, and now that the egg prices are down, we're not hearing, hey, egg prices are down, go make omelets.
Well, and so I found this last week. So America, this is from Axios, America's economic holding pattern. So overall, Americans are not happy with the economy, which is weird because it's doing just fine. And it's just like managing our what we hear versus what is real, especially for those most of us who are not economists, to like use the data and information that we're given and the narratives that we're given to like build a conclusion. But so largely, so like there is... The big picture is that the U.S. economy continues to defy the odds, right? In like May, the unemployment report, which was released, you know, a week or so ago, marked the 14th straight month that more jobs were created than the economists expected.
Yep.
And, you know, and compared to other countries, we're doing really well. Like the UK has sky high inflation and Germany is now officially in a recession. And we've created more than 4 million jobs in the last 12 months. GDP continues to grow and is up more than 5% from its pre-pandemic peak, even after accounting for inflation. The average U.S. employee now makes $33.44 more per hour, a raise of more than 17.5% since before the pandemic. And the stock market is up 10% so far this year. And we're not even halfway. Well, now I guess we're technically halfway through the year. But Americans, while they're broadly happy with their own personal finances, a majority consistently thinks that we're in a recession, and just 18% think the national economy is in good shape. Isn't that wild?
There's such a disconnect. There is. There's just such a disconnect. And speaking of inflation rates, and I just looked this up, Turkey's inflation rate as of April of this year is 43%.
Wow.
43%. Ours is 4.
Wow.
And another thing I think we forget, when Donald Trump left office, he lost 2 million jobs.
And I'm going to push back a little bit.
It was COVID.
And no matter who was president at that point, there would have been job loss. And I'm not protecting Donald Trump. He mismanaged a lot of things, but I don't feel like you can just plainly say Donald Trump lost 2 million jobs.
Fair enough.
I know you want to.
But as we were talking about at the beginning of this program, we like to present things that are truthful and accurate.
But I just think this is like, what is wrong with our brains that we are, there's such a disconnect from what's actually going on with the economy and how people feel about it.
But again, if you're looking to rent somewhere, if you're looking to buy a house, if you are looking to borrow money, all of that's really expensive. If you want to buy a car, I just think it's those things that lend people to believe that life is terrible. This is all terrible.
Maybe. I mean, and I think some of the problem still has been higher consumer prices, like you said. And like inflation's coming down. It's great news that it's coming down even more from the report today. But maybe it's like congressional dysfunction around the debt ceiling and like so much talk about the unsustainability of our national debt. And like, is that having a negative attitude in terms of our like a negative effects on our attitude towards the economy? Like, is it just doomerism in general? I would love to hear if anyone has a theory on why there's such a disconnect from the fact that like the actual numbers of how we measure the economy, GDP, unemployment, job creation, inflation is coming down. Like, we're doing okay. Like, what explains the fact that so many people still feel like this is not great? 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. If you have any insight or theories as to why there's this huge disconnect, I would love to hear it.
Karina from Milwaukee on the phone. Karina, we only got about 2 minutes. What do you think?
I think that maybe so it's right that to compare on other countries, but we live in this country. And I'm telling you, every week I go to the store, prices are still going higher. Even though they say the gas is down, the interest rate goes up. My rent increased for $120. So I don't know. Maybe manipulation in the numbers. I know how to manipulate the numbers. And I can turn around and say 2 + 2 = 5. And I can prove it. So I'm not really sure if reality really connects to what the reports are saying. Backwards. It's not that we don't understand what is going on. Everything what they tell us is not a reality of today. in the stores and every day and how much you spend and how much you make.
Thank you so much.
I think I agree with Jim.
Thank you so much, Karina. We're coming up against the break. 844-967-2789. 844-96-PARTY if you want to call and or text.
All right. Well, we got to take another break, but when we come back, we will wrap up today's show and send you on your way. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we kind of stumbled upon the topic of why is there such a disconnect between people's opinions on how the economy is doing, and that is largely only 18% of people think that we're doing okay, despite the fact that all numbers point to the fact that we're just fine. And I don't know if it's the media. I have to imagine it's the media and
what they're covering.
Covered again and again and again and again. But it's interesting of just our ability to not interpret things as they actually are.
844-967-2789. 844-96-PARTY. Texter from the 608. Ross in Middleton. I think we only look at it from our personal perspective. Am I paying more at the grocery store? We, as a rule, don't look at the big picture. How is my neighborhood doing? How is my town doing? Is everyone working? Are they making good wages? Does everyone have housing? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because I feel like even in the last week for Wisconsin News, there was one headline that came out of Wisconsin Watch of how hard it is in certain parts of the state to keep up with the cost of living. So on the one side, this was from June 7th from Jacob Resnick. Rising cost of living in Northeast Wisconsin has many working families treading water. And then simultaneously, I think WPR had an article yesterday saying because of the tight labor market, what it means for workers, what it means for unions. And so sometimes it feels like there's also just conflicting reports on how people are doing in general. But what's funny is I agree with that as far as people look at their own finances.
Sure.
But at least in this report, people felt good about their personal finances, but when they talked about the economy as like an abstract, they thought it was bad. It's the inverse.
Right, right. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Our friend Greg from Waukesha is checking in. Hey, Greg, what do you think?
Jane and Kristen, well, the way I see it is this way. I think that as long as we are stimulating the economy, as long as we are making the economy go, which, you know, truth, we need to have money to be able to stimulate the economy. But as long as we're supporting the businesses, you know, specifically the local businesses that are help our economy function, I think we're in good shape. This is a total outsider's perspective too. I don't, you know, see any of the numbers. I don't, you know, look at the numbers. I have a hard time, you know, even balancing my own budget, you know, from time to time. But as long as, you know, we are about stimulating the economy, and we do that by going out, you know, by not hiding in our houses, and just going out and buying things and supporting the businesses we love. So thank you guys for letting me share.
Thanks,
Greg.
Thanks
so much. Yes, thanks so much, Greg.
844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. 96 Party. Keith from Fond du Lac is joining us. What do you think, Keith?
Yeah, most people in 2022 lost nearly 25% of their 401k. Stats show.
Really?
And if you want to buy a house, just, yep. Well, nearly 25%. Most people looking at retirement have to work probably another 4 or 5 years to make up for that.
So you're saying you're going back to like the personal impact of I'm not doing well as the explanation of why people feel like we're in a recession.
Yes. Anybody that has a 401k, it's pretty realistic when you open it up to look at your account, how much money you lost.
Keith, I got to say personally for me, I haven't. I've checked my 401k. I checked it last week and I'm up.
From compared to what? Beginning of the year?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, most people also nearly 25%. It's all, if you look at any kind of investment, it's recorded.
Keith, if I want to look that up after the show, since we're getting to the end of the show, where should I find that?
Just put how much money, how much 401k was lost. It shows websites and legit BTIS and all kinds of them. Any financial advisor would tell you that too.
Okay.
Most people lost nearly 25%.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm definitely going to look into that after the break or after the show because we only have about
3 minutes.
3 minutes left. So thanks for the call, Keith. And I know we had a couple more callers, but it seems like we've hit a nerve. So maybe we can start here tomorrow as far as talking a little bit more. I'll get a little bit more research on what has happened with 401ks. And obviously, but he does make a good point as far as who can afford a house right now.
Oh, yeah.
And the affordable house, like not even just affordable housing, but just housing in general that's not, you know, the $8 million mansion, that there's not as much competition in that level, at least in Wisconsin.
But if we're going to talk about prices, I also think we need to talk about the fact that there are industries that have been price gouging for the last 2.5-3 years.
There's people that have been price gouging. But even in when we talk about housing, that opens up a whole other thing. It's like, because I saw this, Texas, Florida, they're going to start banning outside investments from China. Because there's so much property being bought by Russians and Chinese companies, but also private, like American private equity companies that are just like, we're just going to buy houses and then rent them or sell them at a premium.
Yep.
That is also totally skewing the market right now. So it feels like there's a lot of different ways we can take this. So I think this is maybe where we'll start tomorrow. So if this, if we piqued your interest in today's topic about why is there a disconnect between the actual numbers of the economy and how people are feeling about the economy, come back tomorrow at 10 a.m. because we will start this conversation right back then. But for now, thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. Thank you for being part of the show. It's been a fun one. But we'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Greg Bach will be here and we will do it all over again. Thank you so much. This has been Ask Goes Wisconsin. My way, I'm making it.